morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 79. And I am back here with Anson Dorrance. Excuse me, I mean Mr. Tony D. Viss. Not only does he coach basketball, not only does he podcast, but yes, he is a European football maestro. Coach Viss, how are things going out on the pitch right now?
Well, Marty, to be honest with you, we have been inside the past few days. I'm a very amateur soccer coach. And so placing me in a gym with soccer is probably making me even less or even more amateurish. But I've heard relief is on the way. So hopefully the weather begins to cooperate a little bit more. We can get outside and practice and get some matches in.
Gotcha. Matches. Do you call it training or do you call it practice?
I call it practice, but I think those who are winning, this is probably, 95% of all soccer coaches who are better at it than I am, they do call it training.
Okay. All right. It's just that Americanization of the term, just kind of throws me for a loop, So
true.
Yeah. But I do remember some very, very cold mornings and afternoons and evenings watching our kids play European football. One of the coldest experiences I ever had was, it had to be 15 degrees with a biting northern wind coming out in late October one time. And fingers and toes were frozen. And I felt like Kramer after his whirlpool went out and he couldn't get his core temperature back up. Man, it was miserable, absolutely miserable. Hey, episode number 79. Tony, I've got three uniform numbers for you here. I've got an offensive lineman, a defensive lineman, and a baseballer.
Ooh, Nelly. Let's try the offensive lineman first. For some reason, I'm thinking Larry Allen from the Cowboys.
Nope.
Okay, so that shot that sucker down quick.
The defensive lineman is from the Cowboys.
Ooh, defensive line, 79, Cowboys. Let's go Jim Jeffcoat.
Nope.
Ed Too Tall Jones.
That is incorrect.
Son of a gun.
I think he played with Too Tall Jones. I think he was on the other
team. Harvey Martin.
Harvey Martin is correct. That is one. One down, two to go. Offensive lineman played in the 50s and 60s. This is going to be tough. I will admit that. But he was a head coach. Took a team to a Super Bowl.
Ooh. Tom Flores.
No.
Andy Reid?
No, but he coached around the same time Tom Flores did.
Mm. Don Coryell probably isn't, no.
That is incorrect.
What's that?
That is incorrect.
I'm stumped on that one.
Forrest Gregg.
Ooh, Forrest Gregg.
Hall of Famer.
The Packers.
Yep. And then I've got a baseballer, first baseman / DH, still active. Played most of his career on the south side of Chicago.
Oh, is it Abreu?
Jose Abreu is correct. And like Meatloaf said in 1977, two out of three ain't bad.
It's in the Hall of Fame for baseball.
Yes, it does. Well, even for basketball, it would as well. So, good job, buddy. So, let's jump into it here. This ought to be interesting. The transfer portal is open in the collegiate level, they opened it a week ago, right after the regular season got over. We have players who are literally transferring right, that day. We have players whose teams have played in the NCAA tournament and then a day or two later are announcing their intentions to go into the transfer portal. For us as high school coaches, this, like many things, we talk about the shot clock, the three-point line, drills, offenses, defenses, all of these things. This trickles down. This trickles down into our world, and especially if you are in a larger community, like you or I or Antony. Now, I don't coach anymore. I don't coach at a. I wasn't coaching at a big school the last few years, but a bigger school in a larger community is going to deal with this probably a lot more than smaller rural communities. But it, without a doubt, it is trickling into the high school game. You know, Tony, what do you think about all this stuff?
You know, the portal is one of those things where I kind of see both sides of it a little bit, to be honest with you. You know, with the whole portal thing, I kind of wonder what lesson are we teaching kids? And what I mean by that is, hey, when times get tough, pull up stakes and go somewhere else. The grass is greener on the other side, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, I feel kind of like a hypocrite because you see coaches who, when a better job comes along, they go and do it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I can see both. I don't know, when I take a look at the whole portal thing, is it helping or hurting the game? And I think probably you can make an argument for both sides of it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you take a look at the whole thing, like, here in Iowa, it's been kind of interesting the past week or so. Caden Proctor, probably one of the best high school recruits to ever come out of our state, commits to Iowa, and then right before ends up going to Alabama, starts every game, I believe, as a freshman.
Yeah.
Year gets over, transfers back to Iowa. He's here during the winter, and then right before spring ball begins, he transfers back to Alabama. Yeah. And you take a look at the whole NIL thing with, you know, how much money did he get? Does he have to pay that money back? Blah, blah, blah. And then today you hear that Patrick McCaffrey, obviously the coach's son, is transferring out as far as things go with the whole portal and stuff like that. But, you know, you brought up the fact that, you know, you have kids who conference tournaments over, the NCAA tournaments are out to begin, and the transfer portal opens up, which to mm-hmm. me, timing is terrible. But yeah. does that make the portal bad, or does that make the timing bad?
Yeah, I think the timing is bad, without a doubt. Without a doubt, I do see the point of the portal. I would probably lean towards being more pro portal. Like you said, Tony, coaches can leave and go and take a different job, while, you know, players were back in the day, back, you know, long before we were seasoned and experienced, they had to sit out a year and, you know, and they used to have a deal. Remember the deal where, like, if you transferred inside a conference, you had to sit out 2 years?
And you might not even be on scholarship.
Yeah, and so that was a deal. So, you know, I get it. I just think, why not wait until the NCAA tournament is over? You know, I read a thing here where a couple of these teams that are still active in the tournament are signing kids for next year that are in the portal. Like Iowa State picked up a kid from somewhere. I don't know where, but I did see that. You know, it's like, don't you have a game like in 24 hours? That's going to be kind of a big deal, you know. But it's the nature of the beast. It's the way it's set up. So, I think I'm more pro portal. I get it. I understand it. At the same time, I think that there can be tweaks that can be done. Now, for most of our listeners, Tony, they're going to be high school coaches, and the portal is becoming part of the high school game more and more. So, you know, let's just start chopping it up here, buddy. What do you do to kind of work your way through this? Let's talk about your own team first, and what you need to do there.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where almost you have to, you know, and again, you don't necessarily recruit in high school, probably using the wrong word here as far as that goes, but it's kind of like you have to keep re-recruiting or recruiting your kids to keep them with you, you know, as far as the whole, hey, you're valuable here. But it's one of those things sometimes where the grass isn't always greener on the other side. You know, one of the things you take a look at, and again, kind of referring back to the college thing, it's like oversaturated.
Yeah.
And you're going to have guys that were Division One basketball recruits, scholarship guys. They're not going to be Division One anymore.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing at the high school level too, where, you know, you look at, hey, I'm going to go there because that team's successful. You go there and you can't crack the rotation. And so, you know, the school you were at, maybe you were going to be a key contributor. You might have been under 500, but you're going to get a play.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to factor that in and have conversations. And the big thing, I think, really, when you take a look at it, is style of play.
Yeah.
You know, the way you play versus the style that that team plays, there has to be a mesh and there has to be some synergy there. Because if you're, you know, a 6'9 plotter and this team fast breaks all the time and you're kind of caught at half court, look like you're watching a tennis match, that's not the right fit for you.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that what we oftentimes as high school coaches struggle with, and I know that I've definitely been there, is we can feel like we can do everything right. We can try to create the best environment that we can. We try to coach the kids to the best of our ability. We try to create the best experience that we can. With a lot of us, you know, you have players that are playing and they're still not happy. They're again, like you said, Tony, they're looking for, they're looking over at the other side of the fence and the grass is greener. I think that one of the things that is hard for a lot of coaches is to accept that you can't make everybody happy, because most of us get into this business to be transformative leaders and to be there for kids and teach them the game. And of course we want to win. I mean, we're there to win too, you know, but I think that if you've done all of those things, and again, talking about your own team, if you've done all of those things, if you feel like you can look at yourself in the mirror and say, hey, I've worked hard to give this family or this player a great experience. We did this, we did that, so forth and so on down the line, and they're still not happy. Then honestly, I think at the end of the day, it's probably addition by subtraction, because there are some things there that are probably not that you probably don't want around. That maybe you're looking at the talent, or you're looking at the possible trajectory of the player. But if you can't do that, then eventually you're going to be really, really miserable. And as you try to recruit your own team, I'll try to bring this back to what you were saying, Tony, as you're trying to recruit your own team, if you've got a kid that's, or a family that's in that situation, sometimes it's just best to let them go at the same time as well. Like, okay, I'm sorry. I feel like I've done a lot of really, really good things for you. If you feel that way, there's nothing I can really do about it. I can't really change anymore or set up the situation to where this is more beneficial for you, because you're not the only person on this team. I have to think about everybody, not just you. And so if that's the way you truly feel, I'm really sorry. I don't want you to leave. I think you should stay. But and then I think you also have to have that ability as you're trying to re-recruit your own team, that if you have a parent or you have a family, you have a player in that situation, you got to be willing to let them go. You know.
Yeah, the addition by subtraction thing, Marty, I think is a very real thing. You know, you go through, and I think one of the things that you really have to emphasize as a coach is you want high character kids.
Yeah.
And if they're a prima donna, so to speak, and everything has to be about them, and they're making the other 13, 14 players in your roster miserable, and like I said, they don't really have much empathy or think of anyone else outside of themselves, definitely going to be addition by subtraction. I mean, you take a look at the number of teams that don't compromise who they are. I think of the Iowa women and how people were, you know, crying out about, hey, they need to add another post player with losing Sonano and Warnock and so on and so forth. And they didn't compromise and try to get into that NIL bidding war type of thing. And they seem to have had a pretty good year with being a number one seed and back in the Sweet 16 again and still alive in the tournament. And I think, like in Coach Finley's situation at Iowa State, he lost two pretty key cogs on his team to North Carolina and Baylor, brought in five freshmen, And they gave Stanford, who's probably a top five, top six team, everything they wanted in that game on Stanford's home floor.
Yeah.
And so you can't compromise who you are.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's very, very key as a coach. You got to know who you are, what you're about, what your foundation is, what are the key building blocks that you're going to put your program on. And I think one of those is having high character kids.
Mm-hmm. And not allowing low character kids to rule the roost, or low, dare we say, low character parents to try and rule the roost. You know, I think Tony, when that happens, when a kid says, "Hey, Coach Viss, sorry, I'm leaving Kennedy, I'm going to wherever," hey, I think what you do is you just okay, you know, you wish them the best, and now it's on them, and you be as professional as you can be. And because you know that kids talk, parents talk, so forth and so on. And if you start stomping and whining and complaining or throwing a fit or whatever it may be, you know, then your possible opportunities for an impact player to come to your place diminishes if you handle it with class and dignity and humility and the right way. You know, usually that pendulum is going to swing back in your favor.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things where just because, like you said, you don't agree with what they're doing, throwing a fit and behaving, you know, unlike an adult is definitely not the way to go. And, you know, whatever you call it, mojo, karma, whatever, you want to make sure that you conduct yourself in a character way, the way that you would expect your kids to conduct themselves. And so you want to make sure that that's the way that you hold yourself to that standard as well. And you wish them well and, you know, let them know if there's anything you can do to help them and different things like that. But yeah, I mean, throwing a fit and acting like, you know, a spoiled brat's definitely not the route to go.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, get signed up today for the 4th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic will take place on Saturday, April 27th at the AEF Basketball Academy facility located at South 99th Circle and Portal Road in La Vista, Nebraska. We've got a great lineup of speakers, starting out with three on-court demonstrations. Justin Carter, former Creighton basketball player and owner and operator and founder of ProVision Basketball here in Omaha. He's going to do some essential skills and drills for player development. Dave Hubert, the head girls basketball coach at Ashland Greenwood High School, is going to do defensive principles and drills. Mark Sfigera, the head men's basketball coach at my alma mater, the Harvard of the Heartland, Briarcliff University. Great offensive mind, and he's going to talk about offensive basketball. One of the great things that we do at A Pen and a Napkin Clinic is we have our classroom sessions during our lunches. And we've got three great speakers to come in this year to talk during our lunches. Jim Simons, the head boys basketball coach at Omaha Westside, is going to talk about using the three-point shot. Andy Gerlez, my good friend G, going to talk about building a program foundation and practice principles from Papillion La Vista South. And Tyler Bird, the Think Shrink, you heard him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He's going to talk about mental health for coaching and keeping balance in your coaching life. And then we're going to have two breakout sessions. That's probably the thing that makes A Pen and a Napkin Clinic the most unique thing, is you're going to sit around and you're going to talk with random coaches about random topics and pick the brains of random coaches that are going to be there for the clinic. Along with that, once the clinic is done, perhaps the best part of the clinic, I don't know, there's a lot of good things about the clinic, is our post-clinic social. And that's going to be at Wine 121, located at 120th and Center here in Omaha. Just $15 per coach if you want to attend that. Again, it's all about the coaches, and I try to keep it really, really affordable. This year, for one coach, for over 7 hours worth of stuff, $50. That's about $7 an hour to get great information. Two coaches from a staff, $90 or $45 a piece. Three coaches from the same staff, $120, so $40 a piece. If you have four or more coaches from your staff, that's $35. That's $5 an hour that you're going to pay for your whole staff to have a great day of knowledge and learning things. So if you're interested in signing up for the clinic, look for our flyer on Twitter, or you can email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. You can DM me on Twitter. Registrations are due Thursday, April 25th. Have to do that for the lunch count and make sure that we're taken care of there. But coaches, you will not regret signing up for the 4th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. Do that today. So let's flip the script, Tony. Let's flip the script. Bob Smith, player from wherever, calls up and is interested in becoming a Cougar. He's a freshman or a sophomore or whatever it may be. If you're the head coach in that situation, what are some things that you need to do? What's on your checklist when you have a family or a player reach out to you and they are interested in your institution? We talked about possibly losing a player. You know, what are some do's and don'ts here? Let's go through that here. What's your number one do when you get that phone call or that email?
I think the first thing you have to understand is, why are they coming? I think that's the very first thing that you have to get. I mean, if it's a basketball thing, I don't like my coach, whatever. I mean, there's some red flags that go up with that. The situation where, you know, it's about academics, it's about, a better opportunity, making themselves a more well-rounded person, whatever the case may be, then I think that's something that you look at. But, you kind of have those discussions like, hey, you know, it's bigger than basketball here. What are some things that you're looking at as far as things go? And just kind of walk through that a little bit, kind of what your program is about, because I think you want to let them know in a way what they're getting themselves into. Mm-hmm. You might just be discussing style of play, basketball philosophy, different things like that. But I think those are some of the initial feelers that you would put out there.
Yeah. I really like it's a simple question, Tony. It's a 3-letter question. Why? Mm-hmm. You know, why? And I do think that there are certain red flags that you have to think about. We are running into more and more situations where kids are going to multiple schools. You know, we've got kids that are graduating, you know, they're 3 high schools in 4 years and stuff like that. Now, I understand you may have made a mistake, or there's a family dynamic that changes, or there's, you know, certain things. I certainly understand that. I really mm-hmm. do. But if you're talking about a kid that in 7th grade I was at this school and then I went into this district, and at 9th grader I left this school and went to this one, and then as a 10th grader I went here, and now I'm knocking on your door as a junior or senior, boy, that's a big red flag. Just a monstrous red flag. If they're talking about the former coaching staff in a negative way, big red flag. If things have never been their fault, big red flag. These are all things that you need to ask and investigate. For lack of a better way of saying it, you got to do your homework as well. Because I think it was Bo Schembechler said it. If I lose that player that I really want, that kid's going to hurt me one day a year. But if I bring in a kid that shouldn't be here, that kid's going to hurt me every day of the year. Yeah. Something along those lines. And I think that is really, really true. And especially when you are dealing with locker rooms and trying to build the culture in the right way, like everybody is, those kids are culture killers, man. And those parents can be culture killers. I think you, So I really like that first question that you said, Tony. Why are we doing this here? What's going on? Another thing that I think is important that you do is, if you have a kid, you know, hey, this is Billy Smith. I'm from West High. I'm inquiring about coming to Kennedy. I think that it's important that you let him and his parents know, hey, Billy, that's great. We can come over here and check out Kennedy. Before you do that, though, I'm going to call up Coach Johnson at your high school, and I'm going to let him know that you have contacted me and that we have had a conversation, that I did not reach out to you. I think that it's really, really important to be really, really professional in those situations. I had a situation at Scott where my buddy Casey Hall had a player, and then out of nowhere she literally like showed up in the hallway one day, and we're playing Casey like 3 days later, and I told him before the game started, like, I have I have no idea how this happened. I have no idea what's going on, how she ended up here. I did not contact this kid. And he was really good. He thanked me for it. You know, obviously we're really good coaching friends and things like that. So, but I think that it's important that you are very upfront with the player and the families. Okay, this is what we're going to do on our end, and we are going to talk to your coach, and we are going to talk to them about you, and because we need to know what's going on, and to let them know just out of professional courtesy that, you know, you have inquired with us. I think that's just the right thing to do, Tony.
Yeah. And it most definitely is. I mean, you would want that professional courtesy if the shoe was on the other foot. And so you want to make sure that you provide that as well. You know, and in, you know, high school, you're going to have those visits. It's like you said earlier, it's the trickle down thing. Mm-hmm. But you want to make sure that you are conducting yourself in a character filled manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some other things you should do if a kid reaches out to you or if a family reaches out to you, Tony?
You know, I think one of the things that you're going to want to do is to, you know, have some conversations about this is the expectations so that they have an idea of what they're getting themselves into, you know, what the summer workouts look like, you know, your expectations of them being at that, opportunities that you're going to provide, what all your program's about. You know, maybe there's the giving back to the community, reading to elementary schools and different things like that, just so that they kind of understand you're more than just about impacting a basketball player. You're about impacting a young person in a very, very positive manner as well. And I think that's something that's important. You know, taking a look at what are their expectations of you? I think that's something that you got to take into consideration as well. One of the things that you see when sometimes these kids leave, they want to play at the next level. And what are you going to do to help them be able to do that? You know, as far as stuff goes, help with AAU teams, contacting college coaches and different things like that. But I would throw those items in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just being 100% honest and transparent is so, so important. You know, our mutual friend, Bill Finley, you know, he's very upfront and honest. Our program is not for everybody. I am not for everybody. And if you are somebody who you may think is not for this player or not for everybody, you gotta let them know, hey, this is not going to be easy. This is the way I'm going to coach. This is the way things are going to go, because you don't want that kid in December or January going, you know, coach, I didn't know that we were good. I didn't know we had 6 o'clock in the morning practices. What? No, Billy, I told you that back in April when you decided to come on, that we in January we practice at 6 o'clock in the morning, or whatever the situation may be, you know. But I think that it's so vitally important that be transparent, that you're upfront, that you're honest. If you lie, and I don't know how many things I did well as a head coach, Tony, but I never lied. And when you lie, I think that you just set you up for bigger problems. That just sets you up for bigger problems. And so I think being honest with them, I think, like you said, being honest with them about their fit with the team, where, you know, hey, you know, you scored 14 points a game, but here we've got a kid that's a returning all-stater that's in your class, and you guys play the same position. You're going to be coming off the bench, or you're going to be playing out of position, and that's what you're going to do here. Are you going to be okay with that? And don't tell me you're okay with it, because, you know, you got to be okay with it. You know, whatever that may be as well. So I think that's really, yeah, I really like that, Tony. I think it is important in this day and age, Tony. It's a sad statement, but I think you have to, and I hate using this, I'll use a different word. You have to research the parents as well. Hey, Billy's great, but man, is mom just off the rails. And she, you know, she's emailing me once a week, and I got to deal with this. And, you know, she's, you know, all the parents, that she drives them nuts, and so forth and so on. I really think that in this era of the transfer portal, that the parent issue may be a bigger issue than the player issue at times, depending on the situation. Sometimes the players get it, and it's the parents that don't get it. And when they go back to the dinner table, I mean, you have them for 2 hours in practice, but they go back to the dinner table, and what you have preached and done for 2 hours can be destroyed in 5 or 10 minutes at the dinner table. And so I think that that is another thing that really, really needs to be looked at and researched. I'm going to use the word research, Tony, when it comes to that. And I don't want it to sound nefarious, but I think you have to cover your backside, don't you think, buddy?
Almost definitely. You know, and Marty, the thing at our level, the high school level, that's been prevalent for a long time. Like, I mean, you get into high school coaching, you know that working with parents is just a part of it. I think in today's day and age, parents are much more active as far as things go. And so you've got to continue to hone your skills with being able to work with them. But it's a long season, and if you get a bad apple in there, it can really spoil the whole bunch. And like you said, that bad apple may not be the kid. It might be the parent. And, you know, like as you mentioned earlier as well, you know, you can put all kinds of time in, hours, weeks, months, and that thing in a 10, 15-minute conversation can be shredded to bits if they're getting a different message at home than what you're trying to give them off and on the court. Mm-hmm.
Is it okay, Tony, to tell a prospective kid, hey, Coach Viss, thinking about coming to Kennedy, is it okay to tell that kid, hey, look, Billy, I'm just being upfront and honest with you. I don't know if this is the right situation. I just don't know if this is the right deal for you, and you know, you might want to look somewhere else. Is that okay?
100% okay. You know your program, you know your culture, and when you take a look at those things, if that's something you have to fight to protect, you know your kids. And one of the things I think that is extremely undervalued is chemistry. How does your team get along? Don't get me wrong, talent's important too, but talent without character is dangerous. And I don't think you want to put dangerous elements into a combustible situation that might blow sky high on you and take a season that had so much potential and so much optimism and different things like that and ruin it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's 100% okay to say, hey, obviously I can't say no 100%. Don't come here, but I would caution you to look elsewhere, because I just don't know if this is the right fit. And I can help you maybe talk to some schools that I think might be a better fit for you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's 100% okay to steer them in a different direction.
Is it okay to talk to your players about a kid that might be transferring to your school?
Yes, I think that's a part of it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, hey, we're thinking about adding Johnny here or Susie or whoever, and the kids might know that player and might have some red flags that they can alert you to. But, you know, when you add them to your locker room, when you add them to your program, you have to make sure it is the right fit.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of those things, if you have a player or a family who you have concerns about, let's just call it that. If you feel everybody else in your program is really, really rock solid, and you feel like, and again, part of this is just following your gut. If you feel like, okay, I think the calculated risk bears enough in our favor that we can bring in this player, or hey, the kid's a good kid, but mom or dad's kind of, you know, but I think our parent structure is strong enough that they're going to minimize that, you know, whatever it may be. I think it's okay to take a chance if you're iffy on it. But I know for a fact that negative energy people, energy vampires, attract one another. And if you are in a situation where you have one or two players or parents that you have a bit of a concern about, and then you bring in somebody else that might make things, it might take a spark and make it into a fire. Then that's a situation where you also, you know, no matter how talented the kid is, you have to look out for the good of the group and the good of the culture for your program ahead of that. I'm not saying that there aren't scenarios and situations where you can take a chance on a kid, but you have to be really, really careful, and you have to really, really be sure that you feel like your culture and that your infrastructure can work its way through and make it a positive experience and not have anything negative happen to the overall vibe of your program.
Yes. Yes. That's something that's very, very important. The structure you have in place, is it going to be able to handle that addition?
Mm-hmm. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding, with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece, with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Well, Tony, you know who's able to handle pretty much anything you throw their way?
The Rockstars Europe.
They can handle anything, including being part of our trivia. Tony, I've got trivia for you here this week. Are you ready, sir, for this week's trivia question?
You know it.
Okay. We are headed into the Sweet 16. We are headed into the Sweet 16. Two-part question, Tony. Two-part. Which schools, respectively, have the longest Sweet 16 streaks currently in Division I men's and women's basketball?
I want to say Gonzaga for the men, and I want to go with UConn for the women.
Yes, and it counts!
Whoa.
Tony Viss for two! Literally! Absolutely.
That might have been the first time I ever get it right in the first guess.
How many in a row does Gonzaga have? You want to take a guess at that?
Is it nine?
It is nine. You are on fire. I can feel you.
I saw this recently, I want to say UConn's like 30.
Oh, you are hotter than the sun. You are, yeah. Golly, unbelievable. Unbelievable. You nailed all four possible questions without much help, Tony. With zero help. You are, as Loverboy, I believe, once said, you're not a man nor machine. You're just something in between.
Loverboy is in that same stratosphere as Europe.
The odds of us having Loverboy mentioned in the pod tonight, one in a whole lot. I bet Shohei Ohtani has money on it, though. Oh, too soon.
His interpreter does.
Too soon. Sorry. All right, Tony. Speaking of current events and everything that's going on in the world of basketball... It is. Whoa. Oops, hit the wrong button there. It is time to twib it up. Tony, do we want to talk coaches or do we want to talk brackets first?
Let's go coaches.
Okay. All right. Do we want to talk men's coaches or women's coaches first?
let's get Kim Mulkey out of the way.
Let's get Kim Mulkey out of the way. Tony, I misplaced my brackets. I don't know where I put them. Oh, dang it. I'll have to find those here in just a second. So Kim Mulkey, Washington Post. The story, we are recording this Wednesday night. So the story has not come out yet. But apparently there is a big story coming out. Washington Post reporter has allegedly done 2 years worth of reporting. Nobody knew about it until Kim Mulkey said something about it. Well, actually it was somebody said, something, I forget who it was, but they brought it out and then Mulkey responded a couple of days later. She gave the press conference. Your thoughts on how she handled that situation?
I'm just going to go with not well. She made it seem like she was very, very guilty because of how she went after it. Now, the one thing I'll say about Kim Mulkey that I appreciate, she wasn't backing down.
No.
The situation where I'll sue you, and I really believe she will. But the one thing I would go with, the Washington Post, they weren't going yesterday. Like, this isn't their first, like, I don't know if hit piece is the right word I'm looking for.
I believe these couple of guys named Woodward and Bernstein worked there.
Yeah. And so I'm sure they kind of checked out and made sure that their rear ends are covered. And so it'll be interesting to see what all it's about. I have a feeling part of it's related to Brittany Griner. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think there's some stuff there because usually when there's smoke, there's fire. And it will be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out.
Yeah. I agree with you. You know, not only Woodward and Bernstein, but they were also part of the Pentagon Papers, and they had stuff with that. And yeah, so the Washington Post is not amateur hour here. They know what they're doing, and they're not going to release anything unless they've really, really got it. Speaking of which, we'll be watching All the President's Men in class next week. So
I may have to come and observe.
Yeah, there you go. Great movie. That's in my top 10, regardless, no matter what. It comes on AMC, and I'm out for the next half hour, 45 minutes. So in Mulkey's defense, she's coached a long time. You want to talk about, you know, we talked about how not every coach is for every player. And without a doubt, over that period of time, she has coached players that have not enjoyed playing for her. There's no doubt about that. And there's nothing wrong with that. As long as she was ethical and moral, it's fine. It's part of it. It literally is. You can't make everybody happy. You know, Tony Viss, you know, if you want to make everybody happy, go sell ice cream.
Yep.
You know, I think it's just one of those things where we're going to have to pause any judgment that we have on the story until the story comes out. I think a no comment or, hey, I'm not going to talk about this until the story comes out. I think that probably would have been a better way to do that, but I don't think that's in her DNA. And that's fine. That's
her
choice. Yeah. What?
She's a fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. Not in her defense, in defense of the Washington Post. She's had 2 years to talk. They gave her some questions. They gave her 12 questions, and they said, could you answer these 12 questions in 48 hours? I imagine when she left Baylor, LSU had probably more than 12 questions that she had to answer, and she was probably willing to answer those questions. And again, you can't play victim if you've had the opportunity to defend yourself. And I'm sure that this reporter, Ken Barb or something like that, is his name. you know, if he's reporting the truth, and again, we don't know until we see it, but if he's reporting the truth, then you have to live with it, you know? And so, I think any judgments that we have need to be paused until we actually see the article, see what's exactly in it, if it indeed sees the light of day. And then we pass judgments. But I probably would have handled that situation differently. But I think, you know, sometimes our greatest strengths are, a lot of times our greatest strengths are also our greatest weaknesses. And one of her great strengths is being a fighter. And a lot of times that works out really well for her. We will see if it works out well for her in this situation.
Yeah. And the thing I would give you, Marty, is that if she hadn't said anything, diehard basketball fans would have read it.
Yeah.
But by saying what she said, people who really aren't diehard basketball fans, maybe not even really basketball fans, are going to read it.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Let's take a look at coaching changes here. Tis the season. Hopefully some of these guys listened to our interview pod a couple of weeks ago and that helped them get the jobs. I don't know. So, some big changes here, Tony. Dusty May ends up at Michigan. Darren DeVries from our home state goes from Drake to West Virginia. Mark Byington goes to Vanderbilt from James Madison. Danny Sprinkle leaves Utah State and goes to Washington. Kyle Smith leaves Washington State and goes to Stanford. And then today, Pat Kelsey leaves Charleston to go to Louisville. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Who's got the best chance to knock it out of the park here? Which one of these is the best hire?
I like the Kyle Smith one at Stanford, but it's probably not for like the success that he's going to have on the court. I think he's an outstanding coach. Where I'm more going, Kyle Smith has a 13-year-old autistic son,
mm-hmm.
and Stanford has a top-notch autism center,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably as big a part of the reason why Kyle Smith took that job. But that's the one I'm rooting for from a human interest standpoint. But I think one of the better fits is going to be Pat Kelsey at Louisville.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because he's a Cincinnati guy. And that's kind of in his wheelhouse.
Okay. No, I think I saw some clips on him today. And enthusiastic guy, energetic guy. Kind of got a little shock of smart about him a little bit, maybe. I really like, and again, maybe I'm just biased, but I really like DeVries going to West Virginia. I think he's going to be a good fit there. Drake is, you know, not the easiest place to win at, but he's taken a program that has struggled and back-to-back NCAA tournaments and had a great chance of winning this year. So I think he's got a great chance to do a terrific job there. And I do like Dusty May at Michigan. I thought he might hold out for the Indiana job at some point. You know, Mike Woodson, 65, 66 years old. They did not have a great year this year, but mm-hmm. I think he probably wanted to leave Florida Atlantic, you know, before his time kind of passed there, his opportunities passed, which is, again, you know, that's his prerogative, and he's got to do what's best for him. But I really like that. Those are my two. But I really like DeVries going to West Virginia. I think that's a pretty good match there.
You know, the thing I would give you is kind of a little bit of both there. Like DeVries at West Virginia, I thought he might wait Fran out and take the Iowa job if that presented itself for him. And then with Dusty May, one of the things that's always kind of interesting is timing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that, like last year they beat Memphis on a last second deal. Yeah. If they don't beat Memphis and then they lose earlier this year, does Dusty May get the Michigan job? You know, and kind of like what you're alluding to as far as Indiana with Mike Woodson, that to me maybe seemed like a little bit better fit for him. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. It's always a crapshoot. I would have told you T.J. Otzelberger would not have near the success that he has had at Iowa State. And obviously I was 100% wrong on that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're doing all right.
He's doing okay.
Doing okay.
Yeah, doing all right.
Doing okay. So. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Speaking of doing okay, Tony, Mr. Otzelberger has his Cyclones in the Sweet 16, and let us compare our brackets here. Do you have your bracket in front of you?
I do.
Okay. I had 9 teams in the men. We'll talk about the men's first. 9 teams in the men's Sweet 16. I went 9-16. How did you do?
I believe I have 11.
I'm going to have to buy some Arby's if it keeps going in this direction here. So, who'd you have? Who are your 16?
I have in the East, I have 3 out of the 4. I've got UConn, Illinois, and Iowa State. I screwed up with Auburn.
Yep, me too.
And then in the West, I have North Carolina, Alabama, and Arizona. Okay. I screwed up with Baylor. Yep. And then in the South, I've got Houston and Marquette. Wisconsin and Kentucky just torpedoed me on that because I had both of them winning and getting into the Elite Eight, and I had Kentucky onto the Final Four. So obviously that's not going to happen, John Calipari.
I've got a lifeline.
In the Midwest, I went with the Boilermakers, Creighton, and Tennessee, and I thought it was going to be really, really smart, be the smartest guy in the room. Took McNeese State, and obviously that did not go so well with Gonzaga.
Yeah, okay. So I do have a lifeline here because the region that is killing me is the South, but I still have Houston alive, and I have Houston, I had Houston going to the Final Four here. So,
okay.
All right. So, I've got UConn, Illinois, Iowa State, North Carolina, Alabama. I didn't have Baylor. I took Dayton over Arizona, which was looking good for a while, but then kind of fell apart. Houston, I did have Wisconsin, and then Kentucky. I had Kentucky and Florida as well, so we both missed out on Marquette there.
Shaka.
Yeah, and then we were the same in the Midwest. So, your Final Four picks, Tony, or what do you got for Elite Eight and going into Final Four? Let's start in the East.
In the East, I've got UConn and Iowa State playing each other for the trip to the Final Four, and I wanted to go with my heart, but my head told me, doggone, those Huskies don't have many weaknesses. So that's who I've got representing the East in the Final Four.
You want a prediction, Tony?
Yeah.
I think the UConn-Iowa State game might be the national championship game.
I could buy that. I could buy that. Iowa State looked really, really good in their first round game. Not as good in the second game. But at the same time, Washington State did a really nice job, had a great game plan.
And I put this on Twitter earlier this week. I think 3 of the 4 best teams that are left are in this regional. UConn, Illinois, Iowa State, and then if you force me to pick another one, it would be Houston. But that was
a heck of a game between them and Texas A&M.
Oh, absolutely nuts. I wish it was Nebraska playing Houston. That would have been that would have been fun, but we were back home by that point. So, I've got the same thing. I've got UConn and Iowa State. I think that Iowa State Illinois game has a chance to just. I can't wait to watch that tomorrow night.
And it's a late one too, so I'm going to be a ball of fire on Friday morning.
I've got the day off on Friday, so
jealous.
So, in the West, I have North Carolina beating Alabama. And then I'm going to pick Clemson over Arizona. But I'm going to, at that point, rematch of the ACC. North Carolina has owned Clemson for about, I don't know, 70 years or so. And I think on the biggest stage, I think the Tar Heels are going to pull through and make it to the Final Four.
I'm taking, again, like you, North Carolina over Alabama. I'm a little concerned with one of the Alabama's guards' health, He did not practice recently.
The right so kid. Yeah, he's from Omaha.
What's that?
Sorry.
Who were we asking about the guard?
Yeah, right. So that got the concussion or whatever. Yeah.
He's key. Yeah. And then I'm going to take Arizona over Clemson, and then I'm going to take North Carolina over Arizona.
Okay. All right. So we both have North Carolina in there. We just have it for different reasons or different routes. All right. So who do you have in the South here, Tony?
Okay. So we have Houston facing Duke. And Duke has looked good.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big fan of that because I'm not a big fan of Duke. Houston seems to have maybe fate smiling on them. I mean, you have four guys foul out and somehow you still win and end up in this game. I'm going to take the body of work over the we've looked good for the last week. So I'm going to take Houston over Duke, even though there's a part of me that's going, you might want to go with that. With NC State Marquette, I am going to take Marquette. Even though I love DJ Burns, I'm going to take Marquette.
Yep.
And then I'm going to take I'm going to go Marquette over Houston.
Ooh.
And have the Golden Eagles representing. I just think Tyler Kolek is the best point guard in America. Jamal Shedd's right there with him. And I think Tyler Kolek has a little bit more around him, and they're healthy than what Jamal Shedd does.
Okay. I've got the same setup. I see Houston beating Marquette. Again, I think it's going to be a really good game. But I just think Houston is just... They have struggled on offense in the past, but their offense is much better than it has been in recent years, especially last year. And last year they had a couple of kids that got hit or hurt. Excuse me, not hit, hurt. So that's what I've got there. So I've got Houston in there instead of Marquette, and then down in the Midwest, I've got Purdue over Gonzaga, but I think that should be a pretty good game. And then I'm going to pick Creighton over Tennessee. And again, I think that's going to be a terrific game. And then, Tony, I don't know if I'm being a homer. I'm probably a little bit of a homer, but I think Coach Mack and the boys are going to get over that Elite Eight hump. They kind of got controversially allowed San Diego State to get in last year. I don't think they're going to have that happen this year. I think Kalkbrenner is the one guy. He's not going to stop Edie, but I think he can slow him down. And I think that Creighton is going to go to the Final Four. That's my prediction.
Okay. Purdue and Gonzaga. I'm going to go Purdue. There's a part of me that thinks that Gonzaga is peaking at the right time. But I just think Purdue has the look they're going to get to the Elite Eight. I'm going to take Tennessee over Creighton. I just think Tennessee is a little bit more gritty. And then I'm going to take Tennessee over Purdue and have the Volunteers in the Final Four.
Oh, okay. So you're going good old Rocky Top. Woo! Rocky Top, Tennessee. Okay.
You know it.
Yeah. All right, so we've got a few differences here. How about let's go to the women's bracket then? Let's go to the women's bracket. I had 14 of 16 is what I ended up with. Tony is for I missed out on Nebraska. They got beat by Oregon State. Just couldn't throw it in the ocean. And then Ohio State got upset by Duke after being up. Were they up 16 or 20 at one point? And Duke came back and beat them. So those are the two games I missed. Where did you end up at, buddy?
Oh, I decided I'd try to be cute there and go a little bit with parity and ended up with 12 out of 16.
Okay.
I took Oklahoma to knock off Indiana. Obviously, that not happened. And then I thought I'm a big fan of Coach Yo at Mississippi and took them to knock off Notre Dame. Probably not the best decision I've ever made in my life, as Notre Dame handled them pretty easily. And then I took Utah to beat Gonzaga, but at the same time, some ugly stuff happened that affected the Utah team,
awful.
And you hate to see that still happening today.
Awful, awful, yep.
And then I took Syracuse to knock off UConn. Almost got that one right.
Yeah.
Almost got that one right. And then I think those were my toe stubbers there.
Okay. All right. So let's go to Albany first. Let's go Albany one here. Who you got in the Elite Eight, and who do you got coming out of there, buddy?
All right. So if I'm doing this right, which I hope I am here, I've got South Carolina, Indiana. I'm going to take South Carolina.
Okay.
Oregon State, Notre Dame. I've learned my lesson. I'm going Notre Dame. And
Okay.
then South Carolina, Notre Dame, I've got the Gamecocks.
Okay. I'm gonna pick Oregon State over Notre Dame. I'm gonna throw that in there.
That's your school, man.
It is what it is. But yeah, I don't know. Somebody's gonna sneak in there. And so what the heck? It's a one. Even if they lose, or even let's say Notre Dame wins, I don't think it matters because I think South Carolina is gonna beat whoever comes out of that game either way. They're gonna be really hard to beat. Just so I've got Oregon State and South Carolina, but with South Carolina winning as well. Albany two, Iowa and Colorado. I think Iowa caught a break with Colorado beating Kansas State. Kansas State has kind of been a bit of a thorn in the side of the Hawkeyes the last couple of years, and so I think that was good for Lisa Bluter's bunch. So I picked Iowa there. In the other one, this is gonna be a ball game.
That might be the best game in the Sweet 16 that's left.
LSU and UCLA. I went back and forth. I think I'm gonna go with UCLA. But I will say that if LSU wins, you want a prediction, Tony?
I do.
If it's Iowa and LSU, I think the television ratings will be bigger than what it was last year. I really do. I firmly believe that. And you have Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. You have the rematch of the national championship game. In theory, this Washington Post article will be out by then. All this stuff swirling around, all just the whole part of it. So if you're the NCAA, you probably want it to be LSU. I think it's going to be a heck of a game. I'm going to go UCLA, and then I think Iowa, in a lot of ways, by virtue of just having an easier game in the Sweet 16, I think UCLA is going to have to spend a lot of emotional energy, and I think Caitlin Clark's going to pull it out, and I think she's going to put Iowa back in the Final Four.
Ooh, okay. Iowa, Colorado. I think West Virginia put a pretty good blueprint out there of
Yep.
how to defend Iowa. And there's a big part of my brain that's screaming, "Go Colorado." They came from the tougher conference. But Iowa, for whatever reason, rocked Colorado pretty good. So I think they might have similar success, and getting out of Iowa City, I think, is going to help them to maybe relax and not feel as much pressure.
Sure.
So I'm going to also take Iowa over Colorado. We talked earlier about greatest strengths and greatest weaknesses, and we mentioned one of Mulkey's that fits that would be she's a fighter. I think LSU gets UCLA,
Okay.
and then I have LSU with her being backed in a corner. I have LSU beating Iowa and going back to the Final Four.
And I could very easily see that happening, without a doubt, Tony. I very easily could see that happening. So, Portland three here. So this is the USC, Baylor, UConn, Duke. What do you? Your turn to lead here.
All right. So with USC Baylor, I think we're watching the passing of the torch from Caitlin Clark to the next great one, and that's Juju Watkins. I have USC by over 10. And then for UConn and Duke, I am going to take UConn. Paige Beckers is playing at an unreal level right now. I think she's playing the best out of anybody in the NCAA tournament. And then in the USC UConn game, I am going to take the Trojans to the Final Four in a classic. I think they're going to take down UConn in the Elite Eight.
Okay. I have USC and UConn as well. But I have UConn getting back to what they believe to be their rightful place, which is back at the Final Four. For kind of the same reason you're saying there, Tony, Paige Beckers. Just think she's playing really, really well right now. I think they're as healthy as they have been the last couple of years. I mean, they're not, you know, AZ Fudd is obviously out, and I'm going UConn over USC.
All righty.
So, and then in the Portland Four, Texas, Gonzaga, NC State, and Stanford. I'm going to go Texas over Gonzaga, pretty comfortably. Just their physicality, and that is it. Booker is there the freshman? She's really good.
Really good.
Yeah.
If there wasn't Juju Watkins, that would be the kid that's being talked about right now.
Yep. Yep. And then NC State Stanford, I think that's got a chance to be a really, really good game. But I'm going to go Stanford there. And then Texas Stanford. Boy, this is the one I really had a hard time. But I'm going to take Texas. That's my pick there.
I'm also going to go with Texas and Stanford, but I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to take the Stanford Cardinal over Texas. I think situation where that's where the game where they're going to miss their senior leader that tore up her knee.
Yeah.
And I think Stanford surviving that game against Iowa State, it's fate, if you will.
Okay. So we have a drastically different Final Four on the women's side. We agree on South Carolina, but we don't agree on anything else. So that's where the Arby's may be decided, Tony.
Sweet.
Yes. So episode 79. Tony, anything to wrap up the transfer portal and just, you know, how you work with it as a high school coach?
I think minor tweaks, and this is more at the collegiate level, like, let's don't open it up as soon as the conference tournaments are done. Let's push that thing back a little bit. As far as the high school stuff goes with it, unfortunately, we're in a trickle-down environment, and it's something that you're going to have to deal with. I would give two pieces of advice. One, for your players, let them know how valuable they are to you and how much they mean to you. You know, I don't want to use the word re-recruit, but in a way.
Yeah.
And then for the other side of the coin, somebody coming in, be upfront and honest about who you are and let them know that these are the expectations, this is what you're about. If you think you can fit that, great. But at the same time, if you're getting some red flags from a chemistry standpoint, whether it's the player or the family, it's okay to say, I would advise you maybe to look elsewhere.
Yeah. My last piece of advice would be to just stay steady. Don't get too up. Don't get too down. Be logical about it. There's certain situations that you can control, certain situations that you cannot control. Like you said, Tony, everything you said is spot on. Re-recruit your players. Recruit them. Be open and honest, transparent with those kids that might be interested in your school. But keep your perspective. Stay professional. What tends to go around comes around. If you handle a situation well, it tends to come back on you and in a positive manner. And so that, you know, if you have a player that's kind of breaking your heart, if you have a family that decides to leave, you try to handle it the best that you can. You wish them the best. And hopefully the basketball gods will smile upon you and have that roll back to you. So that would be my biggest piece of advice to build on what Tony said. So, episode 79, Transfer Portal. A lot of great stuff here. Great talk with Tony as always. And hope you folks enjoyed it. If you need anything, you know how to get a hold of us. For my good friend Tony D. Viss, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.